From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, Sturgeon Full Moon. And later on tonight, strategies for success. Here's what's happening. Twitter has suspended 235,000 accounts that promoted terrorism over the last 6 months as part of a continuing effort to keep people from using the social network for extremist causes. Twitter's latest action brings the total number of accounts that the company has suspended to 360,000 since it began cracking down on terrorism and violent extremism in the mid-2015. The Obama administration has now admitted that a $400 million cash payment to Iran in January was contingent on the release of American prisoners being held in the country, while still denying that the payment was ransom. Duh. As many as 40,000 Russian troops are massing on the country's border with Ukraine, prompting fears of a new military invasion. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi, who writes for WND.com. Jerry, what do you think? What's your take?
Well, George, it's very possible Russia might invade again the Ukraine. I mean, it's these 40,000 troops massed along the border are certainly frightening. Tanks, armored vehicles, Air Force units, now they're deployed along Ukraine's eastern border with Russia. And this is the same kind of maneuver that Russia engaged in before the military operation to take over the Black Sea Peninsula in March 2014. So there's serious concern in the Pentagon that Russia might be planning another takeover of Ukraine.
Russia's saying that they're only exercises, but I don't know, Jerry.
Well, I don't know either, George, because this whole peninsula, the Crimea Peninsula, has been of interest to Russia. The Ukraine is clearly interest to Russia, and 40,000 troops along the border looks to me like a preparation for an invasion.
That looks close. And I'll talk to you next week about your new work, Partners in Crime, the incredible book, and we'll get deep into that, Jerry.
Look forward to it next Wednesday, George. Thank you.
Dr. Jerome Corsi. Gun rights advocates filed a sweeping new legal challenge to California's open carry restrictions, arguing that a recent court decision effectively denies residents their fundamental rights to bear arms and contradicts a landmark Supreme Court ruling on the Second Amendment. A Minneapolis man punched his four-month-old daughter 22 times in the face and chest to stop her baby talk, ultimately killing the infant. The 21-year-old man is charged with second-degree murder in that incident. In New Delhi, India, Indian police say three people, including two children, have died after their throats were slashed by glass-coated kite string used in competitions to try to bring down the kites of rivals. One of them, a three-year-old girl, was riding with her parents in a car. She had her head out of the sunroof. Her throat was cut by the kite string. Jeez. A ferocious wildfire had swallowed up many homes as it spread across more than 49 square miles of mountain and desert east of Los Angeles. Is exactly how many, however, and to whom they belong to now remains uncertain. Firefighters were faced with difficult tasks of tallying the damage while still battling this huge, unruly blaze amid very hot, dry, and gusty weather that was expected through Friday. What's happening in the skies these days? Let's check in with Stephen Cates, Dr. Sky. Quite a week, Doctor.
Absolutely, George, and another beautiful night for the listening audience. As you mentioned at the top of the program, tonight marks the beautiful August Sturgeon Moon, that great Native American name for the great fish around the Great Lakes. A very interesting story about mythology and also about cultural heritage. But as you stare toward the moon right now, here's something important. Many people don't realize the moon now, George, some 231,000 miles away from your eye, getting closer each month to the supermoon that we talked about a few days ago that'll occur in November. But here's a bit of statistics. Most people realize and maybe take the moon for granted. They know that it looks larger and it looks smaller sometime of the month. But every year, the moon moves away from us about 1.6 inches. So get a load of this. In the future, and that is the distant future, total solar eclipses as we know them today may not exist for far distant future generations. And we now mark on Sunday 1 year to the great American great total solar eclipse that happens again in 2017 on August the 21st. And in your live sky, here's some really cool stuff. As you stare at the moon, this great conjunction of planets that we're talking about in the northwest right after sunset with Venus and Jupiter. I just looked at them about 2 hours ago. Maybe folks did too. They're only now about 10 degrees apart. But on the night of the 27th of August, get a load of this. These two planets will come at a biblical close separation, unprecedented, of about 1/30th the diameter of that full moon, albeit it'll be in a rather bright sky as the twilight, you know, starts to interfere a bit, but it's amazing to see. And don't forget, as you're still looking into the south, just after sunset, the conjunction of Mars, the supergiant star Antares, and Saturn, they make a beautiful isosceles triangle, easy to see, George, right in the south as the sun sets. And naturally, check us out at drsky.com. But above all, as we like to say, always remember to keep your eyes to the skies.
Love it. Thanks, Stephen. Gosh, it makes looking into the sky and space so exciting. In a moment, we're going to talk about the digital world and how it is changing the world. Evan Siegfried joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Evan Siegfried with us, political commentator, president of Somm Consulting, which is a public affairs firm. Previously, Evan served as director of digital communications for Joe Lotas' mayor run, deputy clerk in the United States District Court for the Eastern District of New York, as well as communications positions with the Rudy Giuliani Presidential Committee, Senator Bill Nelson, and the United Nations Department of Public Information. He knows his thing. Evan, welcome to Coast.
Wow, thank you for having me.
How did you, I would guess you started off in public relations and then really branched out deeply into public affairs. Is that a pretty good guess?
Well, I actually was, I come from a family of lawyers, and I know I didn't want to become a lawyer, and I figured I might as well start volunteering on some political campaigns just to do something with my summers. And I wound up getting this really great entry-level job at the United Nations, and the rest is history.
Well, in history it is. Are you asked by a lot of candidates now for a little help and assistance?
I am, and I'm not, because I've started putting it out there that I don't want to help a lot of candidates anymore, because races can be, 24/7 without sleep. So I right now work with issues organizations. I bring awareness to particular issues. I represented the New York City Firefighters Union and helped them get equality on disability issues. I helped provide intelligence on what's going to happen on legislation and how that would affect the economy for whatever industry that it hires me.
You know, this is a huge program. We're on 615 radio stations across North America. And generally, Evan, we'll concentrate on the unusual, the conspiracies, you know, UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot. I got an email from a guy today who said, why are you talking about this political stuff? And I emailed him back very respectfully and said, this is a very unusual year. One, it's a presidential year, only pops up every 4 years. And this one is the strangest I've ever seen. And so you're still going to get your Bigfoot shows and all those other things, but I want you to know we're going to handle this with a different twist and perspective than you hear during the daytime, and that's what we've been doing. This is an amazing election year, isn't it?
It is absolutely fascinating, frightening, and completely unpredictable. If somebody like me, we in the political arena, realize that polls tell you how Americans are thinking, what they want to do, and what they want to see. And when you had somebody like a Donald Trump come along, he completely blew up the model for how you run a campaign, how you oppose somebody like him, and how things are supposed to happen. Because normally he said some things that would end the candidacies of pretty much anybody else, and it's only made him stronger. So I know plenty of Republican strategists who tore their hair out during the primaries trying to figure out how to stop Trump, and obviously they failed.
Well, and one thing, too, I know, Evan, is the polls just can't be that accurate right now. I mean, how can he be down by 10 points a week and a half ago and almost even again today? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I think it's mood swings of the country. If you actually look at the polling averages on Real Clear Politics, they've been pretty accurate, including in the primaries. The way the polls have been, I can actually see them being spot on. I don't think that when it comes to Donald Trump, he's done the right things in terms of expanding who's voting for him. He seems to be relying on the people who brought him through the primary, but unfortunately, those are not enough people to bring him to the presidency. You need to bring in the swing voters,
yes,
the independent voters, and disaffected Democrats in order to capture the White House, and he has yet to really give a good appeal to them.
I think this election is going to go down to almost the morning of Tuesday on Election Day.
I think it's going to be done probably by about 11:30, 12 o'clock Eastern time on election night.
Yeah.
I actually think it's going to close very quickly. I think that the exit polls are, if everything continues the way it's going, the exit polls are not going to be looking good for Trump, and Hillary Clinton could break 300 electoral votes, even 350 electoral votes.
Now, your book is called GOP GPS. Tell me about that title.
Well, I looked at what was going on with the Republican Party and how what groups we've relied on to win national elections. And those have been baby boomers and rural voters. And unfortunately, they're a shrinking population, and you can't win with a shrinking population, especially when the two groups that Republicans will need, or any party for that matter, will need to win a national election are millennials and minorities. So I started looking at how could we bring them into the fold and actually win. So this book is a roadmap for winning over millennials, but millennials have never used a map in their lives. They use GPS on their phones.
Well, that's absolutely true, and there are a lot of them using those phones, right?
I'm a millennial myself, an older one, and I think a map is an antique, and so do all of my friends. Everybody has a smartphone. If you don't have a smartphone, there's something wrong with you.
They say there are about 75 million millennials between the ages of 18 and 34, and that continues to grow.
Yes, there are millennials right now are about 1981 to 1996, and they are the largest generation in the United States at 75 million. They overtook baby boomers 2 years ago. They are the largest voting bloc. They are the largest sector of the United States workforce, and they are changing the country as we know it, not just politically, but just economically, socially, and how pretty much our daily lives are changed and influenced by millennials. A perfect example is 5 years ago, you would never see any TV program saying, connect with us on social media. Now everyone's doing it. And
yes,
that's because millennials are the social media and digital generation.
Oh my God. Yeah. We've been doing it for a couple of years now. You've got to mix that in and augment it with everything you're doing. I love radio and I love terrestrial radio. But people are, you know, using their smartphones for a couple minutes. I don't think the one thing, Evan, that I'm convinced of, for example, for radio listening, is in terms of live, I don't think people are listening on their smartphones for a real long time, unlike their radios that they keep on in their house or as they drive. Primarily because they're sending text messages, they're answering their phone, they're looking at the internet. And so they're not listening all the time, but it's still a strong device, isn't it?
Oh, it's an incredibly strong device. But you have to look at how millennials are gathering information, be it radio, news, TV, et cetera. They like to do it in an on-demand fashion. So what they'll do is they'll basically sign online, be it from their computer, their smartphone, or even a radio, which they can pull up on demand, and they'll say, I just want to listen to this very particular program, and I only want to listen for 4 or 5 minutes, and that's all I need, and then I'm going to keep on going. They're
yes,
very fast-paced, and they just want to pull up the information from places they know and they trust. They curate their own news feeds, and that's why social media plays such an important role. They blend the traditional news, so they might get something from, say, ABC News, NPR, PBS, with the news of their friends. So they're seeing that their friends have just gotten engaged or had a really nice burger at a restaurant downtown. And that is personalizing how we get our information. And it's now bleeding over to other generations, and you see it in your daily life as well.
Well, and for example, Matt Drudge, and I know Matt really well, and he's done an amazing job doing the Drudge Report. people will go to that because instead of having to look at 50 or 75 newspapers, he's got it all capsulized for you. He's got the top stories, he's got the interesting stories, and he's got it all laid out for you. So all you got to do is click those little stories, and you know, just by sitting there at your smartphone or with your computer, you're going to get a capsulized version of the news all over the place.
Yes, you're going to get that. And with millennials on social media, the one thing Drudge doesn't have, and I've used Drudge professionally and personally and been a big fan, the one thing that social media enables us to do is actually have now videos and audio. So we can get not only text-based, but we can actually see people doing whatever. If they went on a vacation, they saw this really cool, they were swimming and they saw a dolphin swim up beside them and they recorded it. You can see that and literally hit like, and you've experienced their vacation with them all from the comfort of your own home.
And what is so amazing to me as well, Evan, is, you know, the technology behind all of this, where you take a picture and through your phone, you can send it thousands of miles away to a friend who will get it virtually instantly. I mean, I remember the old days that we had to shoot on 35 millimeter film and go and get it developed and then mail the picture to somebody. I mean, this is amazing.
I know. What's really surprising to me is my 93-year-old grandmother tells me of the days that, you know, she would go on vacation to Scotland and it would take 2 weeks for the picture to get there. And now she's tickled pink by technology now. And the funny thing is, she's almost as good as the majority of my friends at using tech. Unfortunately, it skipped my parents' generation, but my 93-year-old grandmother has fully embraced it and thinks that she's a millennial herself just by how good she is at using an iPhone.
People have moved into the era of speed as well. They don't have patience anymore. Everything needs to be immediate, fast, quick. Are you noticing that?
Oh, I'm absolutely noticing it. What I'm seeing, and I'm guilty of it myself, is I can send off an email, and if somebody hasn't responded to that particular email in 2-3 hours, I'll say, what's wrong? And that's just my knee-jerk reaction. This is happening more and more with millennials as technology is breaking down the barriers of time. It used to be that you'd have to mail a letter asking for a job. Now you can apply for a job online. And now that you apply for a job online, you get a confirmation email. If you don't get a confirmation email, you might call them in a day or so and say, hey, I just want to confirm you got my application. And it's just moving so quickly that people are really breaking down every barrier there is in terms of social norms and rewriting them.
Oh, you're right. I've got a friend of mine. He'll send me a text message. If I don't respond within five minutes, I get another one from him that goes, hello, and then another one. I mean, people have lost patience. So how do you slow down a little bit in this society? Can you?
Yeah, you can. I think it's if you surround yourself with people who know you, who know that you will take more time to respond, then that can happen. But overall, with people you don't know, you can't as much. You can put up, if you're going away on vacation, you can put up, I'm an out-of-the-office email that will automatically go back. But people are just going to have to sort of learn to take a deep breath, be calm, and if you don't hear back from somebody right away, not to think that the sky is falling.
We're with Evan Siegfried. His book is GOP GPS. That's the title. And we're going to continue chatting with him about what technology is doing to the world. We'll take calls with him next hour as well. Fascinating subject. It's going to get faster as well, Evan, isn't it? I mean, what more can they come up with?
I don't know. I think that we're hearing that today Uber announced that they're going to be putting out self-driving cars in Pittsburgh to pick up people. And it's only going to get crazier and crazier, and we're probably starting to live in an early sci-fi movie era at this point. I'm not entirely sure what's going to happen, but it's exciting as well because we're seeing new innovation, and that always leads to technologies that are not only fun for recreation, but good for things such as medical care and helping people to get through, or helping the disabled. If you look at what is being done right now, they're making exoskeletons to help people who are paralyzed walk again. That is fascinating stuff to me. And I think it's an exciting time for what we can do for people in the future.
Well, with 75 million millennials out there, let's find out what they can do for the future next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, can you believe a little more than a month we're going into fall? Wow. Fast, fast, fast. Hey, so I was looking at the website for the Diana Wortham Theater in Asheville, North Carolina, where we'll have our live event next weekend, August 27th, and they've got 10 seats left, nice seats, on the bottom level, and then the balcony is open for you, as they're starting to sell seats there now, too. But 10 great seats still on the bottom. And so you simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click the picture of the Asheville, North Carolina event, and then look for August 27th. That's right at the top once you get inside to the theater's website. And you can order your tickets that way. Really looking forward to it. Some very special guests and some surprises, too. Lots of surprises. So come on in from wherever you live, and we're going to have a meet and greet afterwards, and let's have some fun in Asheville, North Carolina. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Evan Siegfried, his work, GOP, GPS. Evan, why did you concentrate primarily on the millennials?
Well, they are the largest generation in the United States, and they aren't the caricature that many people think of them as. They are not in their mom's basements blogging while smoking pot. They are out all across the country, and the older millennials are having children of their own, and now they really want to see what's happening on matters of education, foreign policy, national security, the economy, and they are concerned and they are involved in what's happening in government and in the world. So with every passing day, we need to concentrate more and more on the millennial generation in order to stay relevant as a political party.
My oldest granddaughter, she's 22 years old. She's in her last year of college. She just went back there today, as a matter of fact. But she's deeply into what's going on. I mean, she's been to political rallies. She studies. And, you know, she's right in there. She's a millennial. She's 22. And she's that demographic. But I got to tell you, Evan, when we raised her as a little baby, I never thought she'd be into this. But they are. They seem to, once they hit a certain age, they really get interested in this, don't they?
They do. And I think part of it is going to college and sort of realizing that real life is fast approaching. The average millennial in 2015 graduated from college with an average of $35,000 in college debt. And that is something that is a ball and chain for somebody economically as they're starting off and trying to get their first job out of college and really start building and saving for a home of their own and possibly a family. It hurts them, it hurts the economy, and it's a big problem. It's why Bernie Sanders was so successful, because he began talking about the stresses of student debt. And that resonated with a lot of millennials because they understand that problem. Nobody likes that debt. They're already getting a very small paycheck to begin with in their first and second jobs. And they don't want to see it basically living hand to mouth. So they said, you know what, we need to deal with this. And they're right. There are ways in which we can make things more affordable. And it's an apolitical thing. But I think that both parties need to start talking about it and helping to alleviate some of the stresses and challenges that millennials face.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Now, let's talk about more millennials are living at home for longer times than almost any generation. Is it because of the economy?
Yes, it is because of the economy. It went, as I said before, with the average debt for student debt of a millennial being $35,000, look at how much money you have to make in order to pay that off to go and live in an apartment. In a place like New York City, the average apartment runs for $2,500 to $3,000 a month. You can't pay that with a $35,000 a year entry-level salary in New York. It's impossible. So people are going and they're living at home. They're taking advantage of the cost savings of not having to pay rent. They're able to pay off their student debt. They're able to have, you know, food provided for them by their parents if their parents are nice. They're able to even save by doing laundry at home.
Sure.
It's a very smart and spendthrifty thing. Millennials are actually the most fiscally conservative and conscious generation since the Great Depression. Part of that is because they lived through the Great Recession, and that was their real first experience with an economic crisis. And that's a shocking thing to the system. It was a singular event which really changed the way they looked at the world. Everything was sort of provided for millennials up until that point. We had gone through a great boom in the 90s with the dot-com era, and the early 2000s were very good economically. And then the crash of 2008, that was a shocking and scary real-life notice that everything could just be wiped away in a heartbeat.
Okay, so we've got the millennials who are 18 to 34, generally, right around in that age bracket. Baby boomers, I'm in this one, 51 to 69. Generation X, 35 to 50. So, first of all, what's before the millennials? What do they call them?
The latest generation? They're calling them, there's a little bit of a dispute over that. Some people call them the builders generation, and my nephews fall into that category. They are not even 10, the two of them.
The builders generation?
Yes, because they're going out, and they're so fluent with iPads and iPhones, they can use them before they can really walk around.
That's true.
Proficiently. And they're going out, and they're actually building stuff, not with Legos like we used to. They're going out and actually building apps. I mean, these are tiny little apps that aren't going to go out and make them any money, but they're going out and actually creating on electronic devices. And they are being predicted to be the generation that is going to build the next technological wonder, not because it's just their turn, but because they're getting so technologically proficient, it's a second language to them. You're going to see kids who understand how to put together a highly complex app that neither you nor I would understand how it would work.
Evan, what is the group called after the baby boomers? After the baby boomers.
Oh, boy. After baby boomers, I believe that is the that is Generation X off the top of my head.
No, Generation X is 35 to 50. That's before baby boomers.
Oh, the silent generation. Pardon me.
Is that what they are? Okay, the silent.
Forgive me. I mistook your question. No, the generation that preceded baby boomers were the silent generation. They went out and they fought in World War II. They were very patriotic. And they were called silent because they never really stood up and did anything. They never protested in the 60s, obviously. They just went out, put their noses to the grindstone, and did what was required of them. They didn't grumble. And they're really an interesting generation to compare and contrast with millennials because their work ethic was, work isn't meant to be fun. When you look at millennials, they actually want to be in a workplace that is more fun, an environment that is more conducive to a good personal work-life balance. If you look at how companies such as Google and now just mainstream corporations are trying to cater to potential employees, especially millennials, they're trying to make these offices into places they don't want their employees to leave. They're making them comfortable. Google's got a cafeteria that has a sushi bar. They will do your dry cleaning for you. They bring in masseuses almost every day. They want you to feel comfortable and like it's a second home. Nobody likes getting up and going into a cubicle for 8 to 10 hours a day and then walking out. And millennials are willing to walk away from a job if they don't feel personally connected. And part of that personal connection is through comfort.
Will these millennials tip the election this year?
I think this year they're actually turned off from both candidates. They really do not like Donald Trump or Republicans.
Yeah, they were Bernie supporters generally, weren't they?
The millennials went toward Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side, and it was a little bit more spread out on the Republican side. Hillary Clinton represents to them the past, and Donald Trump they don't like his message because millennials are a much more inclusive generation. They're also the most diverse generation in American history. So to them, they don't see Trump as being this healing, uniting figure. So they're walking away. Over the weekend, a poll came out from USA Today that showed that millennials, 20% of them identify as Republican. And that's the lowest it's ever been on any generation. And it's a huge red flag for Republicans if they ever want to get their act in order.
It sure is. 80% of them favor legalizing marijuana.
Yeah. And 80% of them, and of that 80%, not all of them even smoke it.
That's right.
They favor legalizing marijuana and taxing it. Look at how beneficial it has been economically for Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
I've never smoked it in my life. I can't even stand the smell. But if you can get that much of a good result out of marijuana, that's fine. It's not really a nasty health habit. It's just smoke that smells pretty terrible.
Well, I'm a huge proponent, though, Evan, that it should be used for medicinal purposes as well, because I have done many shows in my earlier days in broadcasting with people who could not take prescription drugs, pain pills. They got sick. It was dangerous for them. They switched to marijuana, medicinal marijuana, and their symptoms were alleviated. And I'm really a supporter of that for people.
There are thousands and thousands of stories and examples of how marijuana is wonderful as a medicinal usage. And I think that that only bolsters the case for making it not only legal medicinally, but for personal consumption. We don't need to have massive cartels shipping it across the border. We can actually have it set up, and it would be an economic boon for pretty much everyone.
Was it the millennial generation? Was like Zuckerberg, is he a millennial? I guess he would be, right?
Yes, Mark Zuckerberg is a millennial. He created Facebook. And look how he has changed the world through this little invention he made in his college dorm at Harvard. He has single-handedly changed how we get information, how we share information, how we talk to everybody we know, and how we can move forward as a nation. Look at how the economy has changed solely due to social media. There are now companies that specialize in how to communicate with people on social media. In the past 15 years, we have seen digital communications come to the fore. We've seen companies trying to figure out how do we talk to you on social media. We've seen it in politics. It's a completely new phenomenon. Barack Obama would not have been elected president in 2008 had he not figured out how to use the internet and digital tools to organize, recruit, and to get people to donate. He used the internet so successfully that he set the gold standard not only in 2008, but in 2012, of what any sort of politician should do in how they use the internet.
Now we've got the baby boomer, Jeff Bezos from Amazon. So he came up late, but he too has changed the face of the world.
Yes, Jeff Bezos in the creation of Amazon has absolutely changed the face of the world. He has given people access to lower cost goods at the expense of mom and pop stores. And people were given the option of, will you pay less to have the same item sent to you, or will you go to your local bookstore that might be independently owned? And people resoundingly said, no, we're going to pay less for the book. And it comes quickly. And now Amazon has branched out into not only other products, but they've now got their own streaming TV. They are setting up their own QVC-style streaming channel right now that's going to be 24/7. And I believe that actually launched or had a soft launch in the past few months. And it's really starting to dominate our lives as well.
So would you say it's a combination of generally technology and youth, which is changing this planet?
I would say it's technology, youth, and ideas. As you said, Jeff Bezos is a baby boomer.
He's a baby. He's like us.
Yeah.
Like me.
He had an idea, and he got a bunch of people who were very competent together to execute it. It was the idea that changed it.
And didn't they start off just by selling books?
Yes, that's where they started off. They started off with books, and then they branched out a little bit bigger into other items. and now I can get toothpaste on there. I can get my own groceries, if I really wanted to, on Amazon in New York City. And now we can also watch streaming films and TV shows there. It's all because of how people are consuming and acquiring not only information, but products in itself.
What about people, Jeff, and you know, let's use Amazon and Netflix and Hulu as examples. You have the leader at the time, Blockbuster, with all these video stores that have now collapsed. They were ahead of the game. They sold DVDs. They rented movies. Why couldn't anybody at Blockbuster come up with the idea like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu and say, I'm going to stream these movies. People aren't going to go to the store anymore to look for a DVD. They're going to sit at home with their little TV clicker and find the movie they want on demand, and they're going to do it. How did they drop the ball?
Well, I think they got complacent. And when you have the Netflix and Hulu, they were hungry companies. They weren't really, they were sort of niche in where they were. And they said, how can we change the game? And they noticed first that many people were so busy, and it, mainly millennials, and that they could only consume media in certain ways. They also noticed that millennials in particular were cutting the cord with cable companies. They don't like paying a couple hundred dollars a month to get a whole bunch of channels where they're only going to watch about 10 to 15 regularly, and they're getting several hundred channels that they're not paying for. So millennials don't have any incentive to go out and have a Comcast subscription or a Time Warner cable subscription. They just get the internet, and then they can go on, they can sign up for HBO Go, and they sign up for Hulu, and they watch all the shows they love. And that's part of the I can watch the shows I like when I want to mindset, the on-demand mentality. And millennials have changed the game that way. Netflix and Hulu, and then later on Amazon, all figured out this needs to work. Blockbuster tried to play catch-up to Netflix by offering a mail-in disc subscription base, but that collapsed and then very quickly, and then Blockbuster itself followed soon thereafter.
Now, if something happens technologically to our power grid, for example, or the internet goes down, these companies that are reliant on the internet, they're going to collapse overnight.
Oh, yeah. If the internet goes down permanently, that would be a disaster. Forget the companies collapsing overnight. Society would collapse overnight.
Society would, too.
Half of millennials, it's sort of like that Saturday Night Live sketch from the mid-90s of there's the morning show and the teleprompter goes out and they end up tearing one another to pieces. And I think Will Ferrell begins worshiping a volleyball a la Wilson from, what was it, the Tom Hanks movie. It's a very funny sketch. But I think that many people would have no idea what to do. They would say, how are we to get information? Many people don't even use a phone book anymore. They don't know how to use an encyclopedia. Everything is, you open up your smartphone or your laptop, you go on Google and you type in, what's the weather in Akron, Ohio? And it'll give it to you right then and there. And I think that that would be a massive culture shock for the first year or two if, God forbid, the internet were no more.
You know, we have been proponents on this program, Evan, of trying to protect and insulate the power grid against an EMP attack. That's an electromagnetic pulse attack, which is an atomic weapon detonated in the atmosphere, or an X flare from the sun, a big one, because that is just a matter of time. This planet's been hit with some big ones before. The biggest one wiped out the telegraph system. And who knows what we had before that, because we didn't have electricity or power. But if we get hit with one like that, that hit in the 1800s, we'd be wiped out. Why don't these companies that live and die on the internet come up with the measly $2 billion, which is the estimate, to fix the power grid and insulate it against these two possibilities? That's chump change for what they're making these days. Bezos alone is worth $66 billion. Why don't they come up with $2 billion and get this power grid insulated?
Oh, they'd love to have it insulated. They just don't want to be the ones who pay for it.
They don't want to pay for it.
They would love to get
I mean, I'd be willing to pay for it through my utility company.
Yeah, well, everything with a lot of these companies is all bottom line oriented. They answer to their stockholders, and the stockholders want to see as big a profit as possible. Otherwise, the stock starts to go down, and that's the one problem with the economy these days. Now, you can go out and you can fix this perfectly, and it's a short-term, it's a little bit of short-term pain in terms of financial pain for long-term stability and security. And I'm always a big proponent of doing things along those lines.
All right. Well, we're going to come back in just a moment, Devin, and take phone calls with you on the final hour. And if you're, I tell you what, let's have a little fun. Why don't you, when you call, tell us whether you're a millennial, a Generation Xer, or a baby boomer, or a silent majority type? You share all that with us, and we'll do that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.